caught off guard. No, sir. I'd like to thank the person who excerpted out and sent me the...
We have assistance for the road of a one by policy.
Thank you.
It's
a woman in 48 seconds, half of the hour of 11, and that's the month of December of the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming along, making it part of your listening day. This is the thing that we do. We are here in the plushly appointed, yet not overly... Now we have an extra stool in the back. I don't understand what's going on.
No, that one's always been here.
Has it always been here?
Yeah. That has always been there. Wow, I'm...
Good God.
Talk about my presence.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Sorry about that. Even I heard that one.
Oh, best show ever.
That was even loud for me.
All right, let's tread lightly through these next few moments, shall we? Hello, Tim. How are you?
I just couldn't be better. And yourself?
I couldn't be any louder, thank you.
Good. I just saw the Bezo truck downtown.
I didn't even know there was a Bezo truck.
Yeah, it's a big truck. It says Bezo on it.
Is it shaped like a huge bottle? Is it like a Wienermobile kind of a thing?
No, it's shaped like a UPS truck.
All right. You know, the Wienermobile, never mind. Never mind. See, I'm spotting myself right there. That I caught myself as I was starting to get off track.
No, please do.
As I was... Either turn Tim up or drop that bed just a little bit.
Thank you.
All right.
Drop that bed right on my foot.
I'm just so afraid to have Tim approach that microphone at all now. See, every time he gets, it's like approaching some sort of a caged beast.
How is it now?
Good.
All right. Now it's sexy.
All right.
Hello.
Ladies, it's time for more Christmas music.
Are you at home alone with a husband who doesn't understand you? Let Tim Riley and his mellow sounds of the season pick up your day.
Here's a little tip for housewives just like you.
All right. Okay. Hi. It's the Rick Emerson radio programmer live in the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970. Solid State Radio.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email, if that would please you in some fashion, with your comments, your questions, your clarifications, your hey, your whatnot. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. If you would like to engage with us in that fashion, my friend. rick@rickemerson.com. And the phone is 503-733-2970. All right, a large... Pardon me. Let me just finish my coffee here.
Hold on.
I'm going to take this opportunity to finish this half a cup that was still sitting here. What is it that you used to fill the half a cup? Is it brim? Was it a coffee or a coffee substitute?
I think brim was an instant coffee.
Is it like that? Was brim like Sanka?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't think people drink that stuff anymore. What would be the reason to, really?
I don't even know if they... There's a whole
How
line
about
of
canned coffee.
There's a whole line of products that you don't think they manufacture anymore because why would they? And then you go into a store and or you go to like an old relative's house and it's clearly not an old, like a vintage can of brim. It is an absolutely brand new... And then there'll be those products that old people start to complain that they can't find anywhere anymore. It's like, well, I was going to the store and I'm like, my dad... Man, I remember my dad... Not to get all sidetracked. Remember my dad was in like 1980... I mean, the fact that I even say 1980-something. It was 1984, 89, something like that. He was out fixing up his El Camino or whatever, and he was all annoyed that he couldn't get his 8-track player replaced for it. It was a source of endless consternation to him. Let me finish this cup of coffee in Brill Cream. Yes, the exact 20 Mule Team Borax. I don't even know what Brill Cream is. Let me just tell you that right now. Here's another product that they talk about. I don't really know what this is. I don't know what Vitalis is. Now, I know that there's...
Oh, it's greasy stuff that guys who were born in the 30s and 40s put in their hair.
Is it like pomade?
It's pomade? It's greasy grease.
What is pomade?
It's that the stuff that, like, the gook that you put in your hair.
The what?
Like, the stuff. Like, the, like...
Well, see, the reason why you needed it was when you took off your fedora, your hair would stay in place.
When you took off your brim.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
There's no use for it anymore. I'm sure they still make it.
Scotty's bemoaning the fact that they don't make English leather anymore. English leather or nothing at all, Scotty J. English leather is what I used to wear to high school, by the way, when I wasn't busy wearing Stetson. Those are the two things. I alternated back because I wasn't going to be another guy wearing Drakkar. Oh, no. No, I set myself apart by not being the guy at school in a black trench coat wearing Drakkar. I was the guy at school with a black trench coat wearing aqua velva, wearing English leather, and wearing Stetson. Yeah, I couldn't afford it.
Well, it's always good to put on a little English English leather before dining at Sherry's.
Indeed.
It helps you get one of the better tables.
If you're going to go hit on that hot waitress at the Sizzler, you really need to be awash in the finest of $1.99 colognes. All I would do is when I had some sort of a date or a social event with a young lass when I was growing up, my whole thing was just to stop by the Payless and just walk through the tester aisle. And so if you couldn't decide on a cologne, you would just take the two or three that you liked the most and just do one spray of each. That was guaranteed to find favor with the ladies. Let me finish this. We're going to talk a lot about Lindsay Lohan today, and I just want you to know that in advance. I want you to know that just to be aware of that as we head into today's program. Like a child leaving the birth canal, as we now leave the opening of this program, we head into the meat of today's broadcast, there will be a lot of discussion of Lindsay Lohan. Did you really work at a Sizzler salad bar? Oh, that's fantastic. Okay.
Who, Scotty J?
Who do you think? Really, let's take a quick assessment of the people in the room. Who do you think?
I worked at a Red Robin.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I can see that, actually.
For a summer.
There, being polite but sort of brittle on the surface and secretly loathing yourself and everyone around you with every day that you had to walk. Did you have to wear an apron? Did you have to wear one of those black aprons? Did you have to wear flair? Tell me you had to wear flair.
No. Actually, I was just a host. It was like a summer job when I was during a summer during college.
You didn't actually have to take orders and like balance. You didn't have to learn like tray balancing thing.
No, it was the perfect job. All I had to do was like seat people and then just wait to get off work so that I could use my fake ID to go to the bar.
File your nails while you're waiting to smoke in the alley out back.
Oh yes.
Those are good times, my friend. All right, it is 5:03. I feel so much better now. I think that was a whole lot of meaningless babble right there. You know what that was? That was banter.
It was mind candy.
It was. This whole show is mind candy, except for Scotty J. He is the eye candy of the program. It was. A lot of no-calorie talk right there so I could finish my coffee. That literally was coffee talk just now that we did. I actually had half a cup of coffee I had to finish, and I didn't want to play the popcorn song again. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email at rick@rickemerson.com. Bless you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Is this true? Scotty's typing on the screen. I was a Sizzler busboy / salad bar attendant. I was a salad bar attendant too, boy. I think I gave some people trichinosis. By the way, I think it's long enough past that I can talk about this without being sued. But here's the thing: you had to wear a lady's vest. Why did you have to wear a lady's? You mean made out of real ladies? Like a gean vest, just like mom used to wear, literally. Really? You were the joke of the town, Scotty is typing on the screen.
Not anymore.
They didn't have any men's vest. Well, what is the difference between a lady's vest and a men's vest at the Sizzler? I've seen the women who go to Sizzler. I can't imagine they look much different than the men. It's cut different. The cut of your jib was different. All right. I don't know what a jib is. Anywho, I was a salad bar attendant. I say continuing the coffee talk long past the time when my coffee has been consumed and is now in my belly. When I was a salad bar attendant, here's just the one fact you have to know about this. I want you to know this the next time you go into a place where they have some sort of a salad buffet. Those large crocks of items that they put in the ice, at the salad bars. It's a big salad. It's a trough, really. Let's just call it what it is. It's not a buffet. It's not a bar. It's a trough. It is a trough of greens, except it's always iceberg lettuce, which is like the least healthy thing for you. And then it's just, I'd like something completely devoid of nutrients, and then if you could slather it with grease, that'd be fantastic. Could you slather this with grease and some sort of egg product? Great. Can I have endless refills? Fantastic. Mmm. And so I would have to refill the salad trough, and they have these big crocks where you would put vegetables. And just like, not bacon bits, but bake-o bits in there. And beets, and just all kinds of crap that you would never really want. And the thing is, at the end of the night, you go through and you have to refill each crock, the next day. You refill each crock and then you put it in the freezer or the whatever it is, the walk-in fridge for the next morning. But here's my thing is the crocks were big, by the way. And it was too much work to actually empty the crocks all the way out. So my thing is like you would take the crock of beets off of the salad bar. It would be about half consumed. And my whole thing was just to just put new beets on top of the old, just so it was full. I didn't actually care about putting fresh vegetables back on the salad bar. I just wanted the crock to look full. And why go through all the trouble of dumping the crock out, washing it, drying it, refilling it from scratch? The crock is one-third empty. Bam! You just put a third of a crock of beets right on top of the old stuff. And the problem is that you do that for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 nights in a row, and eventually there's just beet sludge at the bottom that is covered with mold and undoubtedly lethal. So I apologize to anyone in the greater Tri-Cities area who had maybe some sort of bathroom distress as a result of that many years ago. Rick Emerson regrets the error. It's 503-733-2970. Let us now move forward to, let's welcome out of the Rick Emerson Show, Aaron. It'll have to do. Aaron Geek in the city, Duran. Hello, sir. Oh, for the love of... Hello.
Hello.
Okay,
yes.
There we go. Just for one brief, horrible moment there, it was like we were transported back to yesterday.
It was Don and Mike time all over again.
Oh, God, you don't know. Okay, no, it sounds fine. You sound remarkably crisp and clear today. Are you on a different phone?
No.
Okay, are you holding the phone further away?
No.
Well, all right, then. Let's just assume that I've gone mental.
Let's just assume the engineer has actually fixed your equipment.
Don't be snide or they'll break it again. Don't be smart or they'll punish us.
Hey, I wanted to comment on your little trichinosis thing in the Tri-Cities.
I'm just saying, you screw with the engineers, and here's the next thing that happens. You go to press, like, the on button, and instead it just wires something, your testicles get all sizzly. You don't want that.
Yeah, I'm their people. They're not going to mess with me.
Well, that's true. So you have a sizzler anecdote?
Yeah, well, see, I don't look at it as you. I think you were doing the American public a service. You weren't so much poisoning the masses as you were building their immune systems and making them stronger for the coming apocalypse.
It's true. Well, no, for the coming zombie invasion. Because your immune system never, you know, it's not ever going to get strong, as George Carlin said, if it doesn't get any work. And it's not going to get any work.
I drink tap water wherever I go.
That's my thing, too. It really is easy to horrify people by drinking tap water. That's a thing I've noticed. Have you seen this? And I'm not talking about like when you're in Bolivia. I'm saying when you're in like Beaverton. You're at somebody's house, you're a guest, and you say, I'm just going to get me some water. Then they go, well, there's some. And you go, no, that's fine, I'll get it. And they show you where the glasses are. And then you just go over to this happened at Dennis's, I think, that. And you just go and you turn the tap and you pour water out of the tap. And it really is like you're inadvertently drinking their sewage. I've had people almost lunge at me to try to stop me from drinking their tap water.
It's like you're suckling from Typhoid Mary.
Is that like cursing Aunt Jemima? Suckling from Typhoid Mary. Wait, mm-hmm. Let me write this down. Hey. That'll come in handy later. Suckling from Typhoid Mary.
Hey, there's a bunch of cops coming. It's going to get loud here in a minute.
What seems to be the problem?
Is it felonious where you are? What's happening? Nothing to see, I'm sure.
Someone's dying. Damn, they turned. Okay.
All right. All right.
Then go chase them down.
Yeah, exactly. Do that, please.
Okay.
That won't work out badly for you. All right, let's see. What do we got today? Peter Carlin's going to be with us later on today. He was supposed to be with us Monday, but then that was my fault. That was my bad. We did not have him Monday. He will be gracing our airwaves today to talk about the program Heroes, which I have never seen.
It is a good show. You should see it.
See, I hear a lot of mixed reviews about that show. I really do. And I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying that people I trust, people whose opinions carry weight with me, they've weighed in on both sides of the equation. And I would almost rather that Heroes just be flat out bad than to have it be mediocre. And I'm afraid to watch it now for fear that it's just going to be mediocre. And then I just, you know, and then it's just that's worse.
You know, it's taken its time to build. It's kind of one of those. It's one of those shows that if they did it on Fox, it would have been canceled by now.
Yeah, well, yeah. What network is it even on? I don't even know.
I think it's NBC.
All right. In any event, so we got, we got the Peter Carlin talking about Heroes. Dick Giuliano will talk about the space shuttle as we all watch to see if it explodes.
Here it is, Heroes, 9 o'clock Monday on NBC. It gets a 15 share. Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Nothing gets a 15 share.
This one does, 15.6.
Well, because they just wrapped up the big story arc for the first half of the season, so it's a big old...
Okay, that's pretty amazing, actually. That in and of itself is almost enough to get me to watch it. Nothing but a 15 share in 2006.
Not even 60 Minutes, which gets the 12.5 share.
No, and 60 Minutes, that's got a lock on like every old person. I mean, if you've got wrinkles in Eureka Bengay, those are your people. All right. Yeah. All right, so Dick Giuliano talked about the space shuttle, which... You know, may or may not work properly today. Jim Roop talks about the Grammys. We really don't care about the Grammys, except to note that apparently Justin Timberlake got like 515 nominations for that god-awful record of his.
Mary J. Blige got eight nominations.
Who knew she released an album?
I was just going to say, welcome to 1993. The only Mary J. Blige song that I could even sing... Am I the only one that confuses Mary J. Blige with Faith Evans sometimes? All the time.
I get her confused with Mary L. Blige.
Okay. What else? We have the worst sound. We have the worst sound today. We're going to talk about the worst sound ever. Someone has asked me, I meant to get to this yesterday, someone has asked me to lend the weight of the Rick Emerson audience to a scientific survey that's being conducted. So we will talk about the worst sound on earth, but we will also talk about the best thing that Chevy Chase has ever been associated with. Tim just had the best look on his face. It was sort of a, I think I smell poop somewhere, but I'm not entirely sure. That was the look on your face just now, if I had to caption it. It was the whole, did someone pass an unpleasant scent just now? As I said the words Chevy and Chase immediately after one another. We will have the best thing that Chevy Chase has ever been associated with. That
It's something unpleasant out of the 70s.
A
decade that didn't produce very much good at all, really.
I know that it is an admittedly relative statement to say that. But that's what we'll get to. So there you go. We've got those things today, my friend. And other things may or may not happen, but I'm not going to tease beyond that.
It's probably a good thing that you're not teasing a lot as the tote board is rising rapidly.
Yeah, I know. It was at like 70 or something at one point. So I don't think this is the highest it's been. I think it's been higher.
I bet you we get that before the end of the week.
Thank you. I'm glad to know that you... It's good to know that you believe in me, sir.
Yes.
All right. So where are we at?
you're at 66.
60? I thought it was 63.
Yes.
Are somebody wailing in the
like
back?
A dragon.
Yeah. Are you being stalked by dragons?
Yeah. Okay. I'm trying to finish out my owls.
well played. All right, 66, and we will... and then you are in tomorrow, are you not?
Yeah, I'm coming in at 2, right?
Because Scott Daly's off doing some job.
Yeah, he's stranded in Medford.
Yeah, so anyways, we will speak to you tomorrow, and we will check in with Mailman Chris at the end of today's program to see where I am push-up-wise.
Outstanding.
Thank you, Aaron Duran.
All right,
Aaron Geek in the city, Duran. We're joined today, as always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon, who has a picture of Dustin Screech Diamond on her screen.
Along with a link to his porno.
Let me tell you something about Dustin Diamond's porno.
Did you watch it?
It's been long forgotten.
Not for long. Not anymore. What would you say if I told you, Sarah Dillon, that in a short period of time you could be watching Dustin Diamond's exploits in crystal clear digital DVD projection thing?
You own it?
Is it packaged for the holidays?
Package. Yes, I've got Dustin Diamond's package for you for the holidays. No, we have somebody who's going to be giving... I don't want to say it quite yet. I want to have it in hand, as they say. But somebody is hooking us up with that. And not an illegal purloined copy either. We have an actual copy of the... What is it? Is it just called Screeched now? It's no longer called Saved by the Smell? I believe it's just called Screeched. So we have a copy of that, I believe, en route to us.
Oh, good.
That'll
God.
Be arriving.
I don't think I want
to
watch it.
No, we're going to draw straws for that. And at the end, Scotty will lose. And then he will watch the Dustin Diamond. And I think we ought to equip him with some sort of a microphone and get him all liquored up and just stick him in an isolation room with a DVD player and no handle on the door and just have it, because I'm not going to watch it. Maybe by the end of today's program, we may have the Screech video in hand. We may get to that. So forth and whatnot.
Oh.
Shudder makes it all worthwhile. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for you today.
Well, just as James Kim was found dead, a New Jersey man who took a wrong turn is rescued from a similar situation before it's too late. And listen for the new phrase, the way forward. The president and Tony Blair both used it several times during a press conference this morning. Then the president went kind of crazy ranting about 9/11. Mary L. Blige is nominated for 8 Grammys, and there's a new M&M's color.
Excellent. Really?
Yep.
Okay.
That should have been the top story, I think.
Okay, we'll get to that, and then we will talk to Lisa Goddard on the Hill later on today as well. By the way, I'd like to make an observation. Am I the... Okay, what does this mean? Look at this. Look at this on the screen. Scotty is typing this word.
Pertruse.
Pertruse.
Pertruse?
P-E-R-T-R-U-S-E.
Pertruse. But it is the color?
Oh, is that the... Oh.
Is he giving it away? The new M&M color?
It may be a tease. I'm not saying anymore.
All right, okay. Who can tell with that guy? Sometimes I think that he's just banging his face on the keyboard. Well, I mean, seriously. He really eventually is going to type out the completed works of William Shakespeare in there. You know what I mean? He's only one monkey, so it's going to take quite... It'll take a little bit more than 1,000 years. But it will eventually happen. Am I the only one who does this? And I simply... I had a whole thing I was going to do here called crap that I find that I need to get the answer to. But before I get to any of that, which may or may not even happen, because we got Lisa Goddard coming up from the Hill, and then we have all these other things we got to get to. Am I the only one that does this when you get into an elevator? And I don't think that I am. I think I can speak for a lot of the guys in the audience. I get into an elevator, and you know what I immediately do? I know that you're supposed to, you know, you're supposed to be have your mind on your work and your work on your mind and so forth. I spend all my time in elevators in looking up and around to see how it is that I can get through the ceiling when it's caught between floors and there are terrorists in the building. Or if I am perhaps Hannibal Lecter and I need to be attacking Charles Napier with a pocket knife and then making my way out of the building in an ambulance. I have never in my life, and I say this only as a casual observation, I have never in my life been in an elevator that had any sort of a vent or escape hatch at the top. I want to know what building it is, where you live, what country this is on planet Earth, where there are big hats, and they're huge. And let me ask you this, too, while we're on the subject of elevators.
But your typical person couldn't get through an escape hatch now anyway.
You need like the
regular... Maybe their arm could get through it.
the regular escape hatch and then the Beaverton escape
then
hatch.
They could be taken out in pieces.
Have you ever in your life been in an elevator that had a large door at the top that you could climb through Bruce Willis style if you were in trouble? No. Let me just break some unpleasant truths to you, my well-scrubbed chums. If you're in an elevator and there's any problem in the building like a fire, you're going to die. I'm just going to say that to you right now. There will be no escape. There'll be no doing of anything except slowly burning to death inside a small box. I was in an elevator today because it is my goal to use the bathroom on every... It's like a scavenger.
On every elevator?
On every... Yeah, in the corner of every elevator.
I don't believe they come equipped with such facilities.
They do now.
Yeah,
I find if you just bring a pocket full of sand with you, it eliminates that problem. No, because we don't have any bathrooms on our floor anymore. So I'm just using the bathroom on every other floor of the building. It's just one at a time.
Are you keeping track of your activities?
Yes, I am. I'm keeping a mental list. But I was in the elevator looking up today realizing if there's a fire, you're just hosed. You got nothing. It's also like when you're in when you're wandering through a skyscraper or some sort of a corporate building, there are no vents in the ceiling that you could climb through to get into a gigantic crawl space or series of ductworks that'll take you anywhere in the building. That doesn't exist.
No, I think we can crawl in there.
This right here, this vent in the ceiling?
Yeah, I can make it through there.
Let's have Scotty climb through there
and see where it goes.
I just picture a series of whirling blades at the end of the tunnel. Let me ask you this. If there was a guy coming in the front door of this building right now with a gun, not that that kind of thing would ever happen at the Coin Tower, do you believe that you would be able to get up into that vent and escape into that air shaft in time? Let's see if you had like 4 minutes to do it.
If one of you guys boosted me, I could. It's a pretty high ceiling.
What if Tim and I were already dead from a valiant struggle to save your life? Not that that would happen either.
I'd probably prop the stool right up here and then rip that screen off and jump up there.
This is really a thing that if we were more beloved by, you know, anyone, that's a sort of wacky radio bit that we could engage in. If we had more resources at our disposal.
That's the first thing they teach you in self-defense is every room that you're in, find an alternate escape route.
So I
always am mentally like thinking of how I can get out.
Smash that window in front of you and escape through the couple studio.
You can't throw Smokey into harm's way. Smokey, save me! That's just throw Smokey at the Nutria. You couldn't smash this glass.
I don't think I could.
This is double paint. Jeremy,
if you put a little effort into it.
Do you think we could smash this glass like with implements at hand? Let's say that there were terrorists or zombies at the front desk. We had to get out of here. Could we smash through this glass?
No.
No, there's no way. So do you think...
I'm saying the vent.
Do you know where this vent goes? Does it go straight up?
I think it goes straight up.
Steve, it goes straight up. There's no climbing in there.
Oh, no, there has to be some... side action going on there.
Let me tell you this right now. Do you know what would sell? Do you know? I gave Jim Roop this idea yesterday about the thing about the Michael Kramer and the Amazing Racist, that show. Here's another thing that would make money. And I have no capital with which to make this happen. Here's a thing that would make money. It is like a weekend camp for rich dudes. And you know what it is? It's where they let you act out action movie scenarios. Like you are in a room, you're in an elevator, Hans Gruber comes in the front door, bam, machine gun fire. You got to get your ass up through that elevator vent, start crawling through the air shaft to safety. And you got like five, and listen to how genius this is.
We've got a break.
But I'm in the midst of, I'm creating.
You know that you're like just going to talk to Jim about it anyway again.
It'll be funny then, too. Oh, ye of little faith. I'm just going to finish this one sentence, then we'll break. Here's what guys would pay for. It's an action movie camp. You go there for the weekend. You're in a room. Bam, machine gun fire. You got to get up on the desk, get into the vent through the crawl space, and then this is the capper. This right here. This is how you know it would work. You have, let's say, 9 minutes to get through the ductwork, and it would be set up maze-like, and perhaps occasionally little bright flashes and smoke would come in. And you got 9 minutes to get through the ductwork, and at the end, there's one of those bombs with the big digital timer that you got to figure out which wire to pull to defuse it. And if you don't, you lose. But if you do, you get like a some sort of a small appliance that plugs in and makes a grinding noise. Yeah, you get a gold watch. That's genius.
That's a wonderful idea, Rick.
I agree wholeheartedly. It must be done.
I do not believe that you are being sincere with this praise. We're going to break now.
It's time to listen to messages of interest.
We're going to come back. And we'll speak to, what do you mean the character can have slight retardation, too? What does that mean? All right. Keep those thoughts to yourself,
Scotty. Do you think that he just randomly picks words out of his head and just types them out?
I think he does. I think in Scotty's head is some sort of a virtual bag of, like, magnetic poetry words. But it's just sort of like a taco, retardation. I like palm trees. Daughter, you know, and it's just like a bunch of weird random things that make no sense. We'll take a break, come back, we'll speak to Lisa Goddard from The Hill. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Wow. All right there. Hello. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It is 503-733-2970. Thank you, Scotty. It is possible that I'm remembering that Michael Damian version incorrectly, though. The rock on, the cover. Maybe if I listen to it now, it might be lame. I don't know. Some of those things in the 80s, it seemed like such a good idea. Oh. Well, the David Getty version is just weird. There's no possible... Of course, he was a one-hit wonder. Hello.
Are you talking about the popcorn song?
No, I'm talking about Rock On. You know the song Rock On? Hey, kids, rock and roll. Ooh, my soul. Jump, shout, summertime.
Yeah.
Blues. What is this? I don't even remember. Now I don't even remember how it goes.
The random words I recollect.
Jump up and down in my blue suede shoe. It's just a cool song. It's one of those songs. It doesn't really have like a demonstrable hook to it in conventional sense.
Hey kids, rock and roll,
ooh my soul. It's, you know, it's kind of a weird.
Maybe we're thinking of two different songs. It kind of sounds like Cat Stevensy.
No, you're thinking of something entirely different.
Okay.
It does in no way, unless in your world, Cat Stevens is like some sort of weird rap artist.
No, didn't R.E.M. do it?
No, you're thinking of Drive.
Okay.
You're thinking of Hey Kids. Now.
That's exactly
now,
what I'm
now,
thinking
now
of.
Now I want to sing it like Michael Stipe. No, you're thinking of, but he does quote the same song, Rock On.
Okay, so I don't actually know the song, but I know the quote from a different song.
No, Drive by R.E.M., that is actually my single favorite R.E.M. song, though. That is actually, I'm saying for me now, only for me, that's the best song R.E.M. ever did. Not that Lisa Goddard cares about any of this. Let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show from the Hill. With a brain full of stuff and a head full of other things that are like the stuff, but slightly different, but still compelling nonetheless. It's Lisa Goddard. Hello.
I don't know if I could have put it better myself.
Well, I started off strong there, and then I was just trying to be aiming for adequate there at the end. that is the story. That aiming for adequate is, I'm going to write that down right now. Someday my future best-selling autobiography. Hold on. Aiming for adequate. For adequate. The Rick Emerson Saga.
You guys lost me, though, didn't you? I mean, that was Michael Damian.
Yeah, well, see, but... here we go. Now, see, here's the thing.
No?
Michael Damian did Michael Damian from The Young and the Restless.
What's it?
He did a cover of that song.
Right.
In the 80s. Which, as I... Like, in my head, seems a lot... But, Scotty, see, now you're going to have to go find it. Now you're going to have to...
I'm showing... My little internet search is showing a group called Essex. Does that ring any bells, anybody?
No, I got nothing. Essex? FX?
Essex, Great Britain, Essex, England.
Oh, Essex. Now is it Michael David Essex? Scotty, is it David Essex? Okay, David Essex did the original version in the 70s, I believe. Michael Damian from The Young and the Restless did a sort of, echoey, reverby kind of 80s nagel painting kind of version in the 80s. And then Neither of those was done by R.E.M., but R.E.M. then quoted the song Rock On as the opening stanza and closing stanza of their song Drive, which is the lead track from their 1994 album Automatic for the People. There you go.
Brilliant.
That is all ye know and all ye need know, as Hunter Thompson used to say. All right. Hey, let me ask you this before we move any further. When you go into an elevator, do you ever check the ceiling to see if there's an escape panel there in case terrorists were to invade the building?
All the time. And you know, I haven't seen one in years. And I look regularly, I hate to admit.
I got to say, now there were some people on this program, I'm not going to identify who they were, but there were people on this program, skeptics, cynics, people who thought that perhaps I was the only one who checked the ceiling of an elevator to see if there was some sort of an escape panel there. There were people who thought that that was something unique to me, Rick Emerson.
I'm sorry to take that away from you.
I'm glad that I'm not crazy. I was speculating, and then there is actual news to talk about, but I was speculating that I was not the only one. And furthermore, I had this genius idea, and really, I have ideas all the time. They're always coming to me. Most of them are useless. But every now and again, I'd say there's like one out of 50 that it's where like the heavens part and there is a beam of sunshine. And the sweet Lord just beams an idea into my brain that in its rarefied genius just has to be, it's breathtaking. And this is one of those ideas. Jason Sporbert would find this interesting. Yes, what?
You're repeating the same thing within like 35 minutes. You know, you can at least wait a little while.
Lisa wasn't here.
I know, but Lisa wasn't here, but everyone else is listening. Already heard this.
Listeners have been there.
You see?
I mean, you talked about it for the last, for the first 10 minutes of the show.
Are you saying that Lisa doesn't matter?
Saying Lisa matters quite a bit, but, maybe we should rethink the beginning of the show if you're going to keep repeating the same story.
There's some kind of movie idea.
I'm sorry?
Is that where we're going? Is there some sort of movie?
Movies.
Apparently it doesn't matter. Apparently,
right.
Now you'll never know because apparently I'm not going to... apparently it's uninteresting to everybody, and so I'm just not going to repeat it.
Oh, don't let it hurt your feelings.
I'm just never going to repeat it again.
Fine, tell her. You're making me feel bad.
We're going to put it into...
I'm with you, Sarah. I'm okay.
We're going to put it into the latrine of discarded thoughts that Rick Emerson had that were deemed unimportant by the assembled masses. It's okay.
Of misfit toys,
Exactly. I'm not going to take it personally. We'll just move on and we'll talk about the war. Fine.
Big of you, yeah.
That's okay. So, Robert, I should know this, but I don't because I'm not all that bright. What did Robert Gates, he was confirmed by the Senate as Secretary of Defense, and so who is this guy? What did he do? Where did he come from? Where did they find him?
After he's been confirmed, now you're like, who is this
guy? I just realized that because he's presumably going to have some impact on the country, now I should probably care enough to find out.
Right. No, Robert Gates, very well known in Washington. He worked at the CIA for a long time, for decades, and then became director of the CIA, but not for long, only for 18 months. Then Bill Clinton was elected, and a lot of things changed in the CIA, or at least the top of it changed. So he has a long history of service, especially in the intelligence realm. And then after that, he went to become president of Texas A&M, earning, I think, something like $750,000 a year. He's taking a very big pay cut, which a lot of people are well aware of, to take on the job as Secretary of Defense. But obviously, a lot of prestige and potentially a lot more money down the road. But, I really believe him when he says that that's not why he's doing it, that he's doing it because he thinks now the country and the Pentagon in particular needs new leadership. And so he's stepping up.
Well, that was going to be my question, actually, not to be cynical about it, because I know I've been accused of such attitudes in the past. But just to say that is this... And I guess you've already answered it, at least in regard to this guy, that is this a... Because I look at Tony Snow sometimes, and we have talked a lot of... We have followed the endless procession of press secretaries there from, you go all the way back to whatever administration, the Ari Fleischers and the Mike McCurrys, where it's like they get this job, and they're so bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And then within about 6 months, it's just the life has been beaten out of their eyes. And they've got huge bags and on their face. And that they just go home every night and they just take a fifth of wild turkey out of the freezer. And they just hate their lives. But by the same token, when Tony Snow is sitting around the house doing what he's sitting there in his cardigan and the phone rings and they're saying, hey, we'd like you to come serve at the pleasure of the president. That's just a thing I guess you can't say no to, but it just, you got to wonder if this is the Secretary of Defense, if this is the very definition of the pig in the poke, where you take this job and then you just find out that it is just this big taffy monster that you cannot possibly get your arms around.
I think a lot of people that are coming into these jobs now, including Gates and Snow, know coming in that it's going to be a nightmare in a lot of different aspects. That you're going, there's a lot of battles you're not possibly going to win. That you're constantly going to be besieged with information and requests and needs. And I think for the most part, they say to themselves that they get into it because of the call of history. You know, who wouldn't want to be, who say, you know, I was the press secretary of the president, I was secretary of defense at this incredible moment for our country. You know, and that's when you come into it. Of course, you don't realize coming into it the specific pitfalls. You know there's going to be general pitfalls. You know it's going to be tough, but you don't know the specific problems that are going to come your way, some of which might not, there might not be any solutions to, and that's the situation with Iraq for sure. I think Gates knows that there might not be any really good solution at this point.
Does a guy like this, is part of his job effectively to sort of be out there so that George Bush does not have to get on camera and reverse himself?
Robert Gates or Tony Snow?
No, Gates. In other words, is he there to go on camera and make the reversal of administration policy in some way, in a generalized sense, so that Bush... Because,
right.
Which sort of dovetails with another question, which is, how does all of this slow turn that we're seeming to make on Iraq play with George Bush's base, you know, that hardcore that Karl Rove always feels is never going to defect him?
I think the choice of Robert Gates, I think the choice to... first Secretary Rumsfeld to go already is an about-face from the Bush administration that they knew they had to make after the election. It's possible that Robert Gates may get up there and say some things that the president himself doesn't want to say, but this administration hasn't really worked that way. It seems to have gone from the top down, and the president in major decisions has pretty much taken it, he's taken it himself. You know, but the way they do it is they never say directly, hey, guys, I've held this press conference because I'm changing my policy in Iraq. You know, they'll say something like, well, we've said all along that we wanted victory, and now the situation on the ground has changed, and so we're changing with it. And, you know, you're not going to hear those, you very seldom hear those dramatic reversals, but we have been hearing them in the last 3 weeks from the president and from others. So I think just the fact that Robert Gates or anyone else is in there is that change in policy.
Our news director, our esteemed news director Tim Riley here, he spotted the birth of a new catchphrase. We're always excited about this, by the way, because Barack Obama had one a while back where he was talking about the audacity of hope. And I always love to spot the birth moments of those catchphrases that are clearly going to be pounded into our brains relentlessly. The new one, apparently, according to Tim Riley here, and he is rarely wrong about such things, is that we are looking for a way forward, apparently. That's going to be the new...
I think that's right. That's a good call.
So he spots these things.
Coming right off of the Iraq Study Group report, forward.
Which is exactly the other final thing I wanted to ask you about. This is the Iraq Study Group, and we've talked so much about this sort of... this kind of meta-mutual, the crowd that they gathered to put this together and so forth, and not to disparage those guys and the stuff that they know and their political acumen and so forth, but here's something that I haven't heard anybody say, which is that, I mean, and maybe this is the case, maybe it's not, has anybody gone and for this Iraq study group, this report that they released, did anybody go and talk to the Iraqis about this?
Yeah, the Iraq study group themselves went to Baghdad, and they were inside the green zone the entire time, the 10 members together, but they did, during that interview, more than a dozen Iraqi officials, at least. The names are inside the Iraq study group of who they talked to. And they also, James Baker, saying today that he himself engaged Iranian leaders trying to figure out if they would be willing to help in any way. So they did personally talk to the folks who actually will be affected.
Do you suppose the Iraq citizens feel the same way about our presence there that the Iraq so-called leaders do?
Whew, wow, that's a big question, because I'm not even sure how the Iraqi leaders feel about it. I think they themselves are conflicted. They admit that they need us there for stability, but they don't want us there. So I don't know. I'm not even sure how to answer that. Sorry, I'm letting you down on that.
Oh, no, it's okay. I mean, it's a big... Well, and when you say Iraq citizens, of course, or Iraq leaders, you're talking about, I guess, wildly disparate groups of people that are...
The thing.
...lumped together, yeah. I just...
segments.
I do wonder, and just really out of curiosity more than anything else, sort of what the feeling on the ground, as they say, about this is. Because I don't, you know... Because I'm like most Americans, where when the people talk about Iraq... I picture, like, a huge, rocky, desolate desert with, like, three houses in the middle.
Mm.
And then, like, one building somewhere where there's, like, a guy at a card table and he's the president. So I don't really know, you know, how the image of Americans or what we're doing, how that sort of trickles out to the people in the streets or whether it does at all. I mean, it's just, I guess it's too big to tackle here, but...
You know, my impression, just from what I've read and from the reporters that I know that have been to the region, who are in the region, is that for each Iraqi family, it is becoming more and more a case of individual survival. And so for For Sunnis, it means they have to watch out for Shiite death squads, literally. For the Shiites, they have to watch out for Sunnis who may be trying to establish their own violence, their own command in some areas. Then you get into Kurdistan, which is a whole other situation, a little bit more stable, a lot more stable than the rest of Iraq. But I think most Iraqi families right now are just trying to survive and deal with day to day. Ben Wiedemann from CNN did a piece today that was really excellent, I thought, talking about the flood of Iraqis just going out of the country. Many of them came back right after Saddam Hussein was taken out of power, and now for their safety and so for their state of living, they're getting out.
Good God Almighty. All right. Well, I will just leave you with this one thought, that no matter what anybody may say to you for the rest of the day, no matter how the rest of your day may go, whether it's good, bad, somewhere in between, rest assured that you are not the only one now that gets into an elevator. Not only do you walk down the street and calculate in your head how you would prepare, how you would report headlines for stories that have not happened to you and probably won't.
Yes.
But you are not alone in looking up into elevators and wondering how you would escape Hannibal Lecter were he to burst on the bottom floor of the building.
Or on the subway. I'm constantly like, what's the closest way to the, how do I get out? Where's my tape recorder in case a bomb goes off so I can record it while I'm running away from my life?
For when the sarin gas begins to pour in.
Right, exactly. I do. I think, is my scarf here so I can put it to my mouth while I'm tape recording the screen? Are there any children around that I would need to help get out? Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Fantastic. I read a great story, article last night about the, because I am a nerd, I read a great article in Mother Jones about high school debaters and blah, 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 blah. And there was this big, and I won't go on about it here because we're almost out of time, but there was a big thing about 10 ways to know that you're a debater, you know, 10 ways to tell that somebody is a debater. But really, all the stuff you're listing, there really are, like, things that are specific to journalists or broadcasters, and all the stuff you're listing is exactly the stuff that everybody knows. So, all right, Lisa Goddard, enjoy the rest of your day. We will talk to you soon.
All right, way forward.
All right, thank you. Lisa Goddard on the Hill, ladies and gentlemen. Fantastic. Just when you think her calls can't get any better, bam. You know what she does?
I'm sorry for stopping you, telling her your idea.
It's okay.
I know you're going to share it with Roop, and then I know you're probably going to share it with whoever, with Dick Giuliano.
Everyone
who listens to the show is going to have to listen to it 5 times.
You know, a hit single is played many, many times during the course of a day, Sarah. If there's
a song...
Are
you planning on making this actually become a reality?
No. No, it's just an idea. It's just a thing I'll mention and then never do. We could do a whole show someday, which we will not... That day will not be today, incidentally. We could do a whole show of great ideas I came up with, either for the show or just in general, that then I never did. Remember that day? Oh, it was last week. We were going to have Scotty go down to the Oscar Mayer kid. I am going to do that one, though. That's still in the hopper. I just don't even know where to begin with that. Where do you even begin with having Scotty J. go down and pretend to be the Oscar Mayer kid and sign autographs at a Safeway?
Oh, we've got to make sure that he knows the Oscar Mayer song. We've got to get him some Oscar Mayer attire.
Did you really say Oscar Mayer attire?
I didn't even realize I was going to say that, yeah.
Oscar Mayer attire to something, die in a fire. No.
Scotty J., this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say except...
You're not going to amount to...
Thank you.
Oscar Mayer attire.
So...
To wear like a bird on a wire. No, there's something.
No.
There's a third one there. Hello, Scotty J.
Good morning.
You're looking very...
Dapper?
Upscale today.
Right, that's what happens.
The top half of him.
That's what happens when you absolutely can't find any clothes anywhere.
You wear something nice.
Right.
Well, it's like you have the really nice dress shirt on, but then you're wearing like your stonewashed jeans
that's
on the bottom.
That's David Essex look.
Okay.
Right, okay.
That is a nice shirt. Now, may I ask, do you know who made that shirt?
Right, I don't.
Okay. I admire a good shirt.
Jeffrey Bean.
Ooh. Oh, I own many Jeffrey Bean shirts myself. So there you go.
You're classing it up today, Scotty J.
All right. I never even
knew,
but see, but up until a couple of years ago, I never used to be able to name anything like that at all. Ever, ever, ever. And you know when I started to learn how to identify or to be able to know who made a shirt, it's when we were shopping for Bigger Than Jesus clothing. And there was that Perry Ellis shirt that we bought. And that was actually the first time. And then I started to take a look through my wardrobe, and I started to note that the shirts I actually liked all tend to be made by the same, you know, they were like guys who would make or whatever, companies who would make clothing that I like. And then that's so I never knew to keep track of that at all until a couple years ago. But see, the more you know, knowing is half the battle, Scotty. Please now to demonstrate that you know the Oscar Mayer Wiener jingle.
The wish I was an Oscar Mayer wiener.
You know which one I'm talking about.
That is what I'd truly like to be, because if I was an Oscar Mayer wiener, everyone would be in love with me, right?
Is there a second hidden stanza to that, or are those the only lyrics, to the best of my knowledge?
To the best of my knowledge.
Do you ever have a song and, like, you think you know the whole thing, and then you're at church or something, or, like, you're watching a movie, and suddenly they're singing lyrics to the song that, like, you didn't know existed? They've apparently always been around, you just never knew what they were. All right. So you do know it. All right. Step one.
Right.
What's the next step?
Oscar Mayer retire.
Put baloney patches on my eyes or what?
Don't we think of a beanie with a spinner on it?
Let's go back for a second.
A baloney spinner.
Stop. Baloney patches on your eyes. Now, this is another one of those phrases that you use sometimes, and Sarah and I look at each other because we think there's something wrong with you. What does that mean, and why would you say it?
Well, if I'm representing Oscar Mayer...
When have you ever seen somebody representing Oscar Mayer wear, quote, baloney patches on their eyes?
For anyone representing food, having clothes made out of the food.
Or anybody ever, anywhere, wearing meat.
It's a festive costume. I don't know. Just an idea.
You are just a man.
Let's throw that one out.
You really are just a mystery grab bag of goodies. You really are. All right, so what is Oscar Mayer attire? Do we know?
Yellow.
What is the...
Isn't it like yellow and red and blue?
Is that true? Is that what the Oscar Mayer kid wears? Is there a real Oscar Mayer kid?
Yeah, somewhere.
Do we know what he wears?
In fact, they were just doing auditions for the new Oscar Mayer kid, you know, and they were having...
Oh, that's right, because they were doing those, I wish you wouldn't Oscar Mayer wiener!
Right.
You know, those, like, weird...
Change it to rap.
Yeah. I wish.
Please not to be rapping the Oscar Mayer wiener jingle.
Come on,
Scotty.
Come on.
I don't think
you could. Believe in yourself.
You'll wear meat on your face, but you won't rap. Please not to rap the Oscar Mayer.
I know you could do it better.
I'll give you $1 if you rap the Oscar Mayer wiener jingle.
Well, I can't even think of how to.
Like,
I wish I were an Oscar Mayer wiener.
I wish I was an Oscar Mayer wiener.
I don't know. That's horrible. See, it would take several takes.
We can all agree. Okay, we're going to take a break. Next hour, we'll find step number two on making Scotty the Oscar Mayer wiener kid. See, that's how we should tackle these problems, bite-sized. Don't try to do them all at once. Next hour, step number two. Okay. 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, you're 6 minutes away from Tim Riley. Stay right there.